The Guardian.
With The Guardian's Future of Journalism Festival in full swing, this session turns its attention to multimedia, specifically to video online and how it can be differentiated from television. Chairing the session is The Guardian's columnist Jonathan Friedland, and on the panel is Saranga Chandratilaka from video search engine Blinks, Anthony Lilly from Web 2.0 production company Magic Lantern, Maggie O'Kane of Guardian Films, and Guardian.co.uk's network editor Tom Happold.
So the question before us is about a video on the internet and how not to be TV. And four people gathered here who, utterly unlike me, are absolutely expert in this question and deal with it in their daily working lives. So let's just introduce them and then we'll get right stuck in. On the far right, but only geographically, is a man who runs the largest video search engine, so that's your claim anyway, but you launched Blinks in 2004, and since then it went public last year. It's been a huge success. Welcome, Saranga Chandratilaka. Nice to see you. On my left here is somebody who says his favourite question is why not? The executive producer of 4Docs, among other things, but also the chief executive of Magic Lantern Productions, and people involved in this field know that they do video on a range of platforms, television but also online. He is Anthony Lilly. And two people known absolutely everyone here. Here on my right, somebody who won every award going as a foreign correspondent in print, now as editorial director of Guardian Films, has won every award going again in TV. And she is, of course, Maggie O'Kane. And lastly, but by no means least, veteran of Channel 4 News and the BBC's 10 o'clock news, and now network editor of Guardian.co.uk, Tom Happold. So that's the panel. The question is how not to be TV. I thought we would start, we'll start with you, Saranga, on this question about, first of all, it's taken as read that somehow it should be different. Why should it be different? Why is it important for video online to be different from TV? And in what ways is it?
Okay. I'm an engineer, or at least I was originally. So on the question of why should things be different, my answer is usually because it can be, which, you know, is slightly immature. But, you know, I have sort of have an attitude of if something can be different, then it's well worth plunging into and seeing what happens next. You know, the worst that can happen is it's bad and you have to go back again. But the reason why it can be different is because the nature of the technology that's delivering the content, in this case a bit of audio or video, is very, very different to the nature of the technology that has delivered it in the past. You know, traditionally we've had access to basically broadcast technologies like terrestrial broadcast, satellite, cable, etc., which has a whole bunch of limitations, lots of advantages too, but lots of limitations regarding the nature of how each and every one of us can pick what we want to watch, how we watch it, when we watch it, how much of it we watch, and sort of how we control it while we're watching it. I'm saying watch, listen applies to all these things as well. And of course, the web and the internet is completely different. You can pick where you start, when you stop. You can sort of jump around in ways that you just cannot do with regular, normal technologies. And that means that a lot more is possible. It throws up all kinds of questions. What do you offer? How do you offer it? What does it mean from a content point of view, from a commercial point of view? But it basically means that there's a lot more opportunity. We can all rethink some of the very basic sort of fundamental assumptions we've all had regarding the way a piece of content ought to be structured and how it ought to be delivered from start to finish. So I think quite an interesting area.
Thank you. Maggie, what about why is it important for the video you do for the website to be different, and in what ways is it different?
See, I think it's a presumption here that it has to be different. I mean, I have only got one criteria, really, and it has to be good. And sometimes TV can do stuff brilliantly, and sometimes the web can do stuff brilliantly. So we can get caught up in means of delivery and what we deliver and new technologies. But actually, at the end of the day, the only reason anybody's going to watch any of this stuff is because it's good. So that's the first thing. Secondly, there's an incredible adventure here that's about to happen, and that is happening, and that is that you can deliver in different kind of forms, and you can deliver a 9-minute piece, a 7-minute piece, whatever it deserves, it gets. Now, basically, the BBC and the broadcasters have become calcified by process. For example, we've just had two films, one in Somalia and one in Zimbabwe, that have been through the editorial process, one for Panorama and one for Channel 4 News, both of which being through the editorial process, and and the safety committee has turned it down. So the editor of Panorama can't go somewhere because the safety committee has made a decision for whatever reasons. So
meaning the making of the film would be too dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But I mean, so institutions have process. The thing about The Guardian is it's a fantastically free operation in the sense that we can try things, as you say, and we can make them work in different formats and in at different lengths. So it doesn't have to be different. It just has to be good. But we have got a massive advantage here in that we don't have to fit into the usual slots. And we can change that, and we can celebrate that, and we can deliver that.
Good. Thank you. Anthony, Lily, these two questions. And Maggie's questioning the premise here that it has to be different. But what's your take?
I'm not sure it has to be necessarily different to television. I'm not sure television's a place I'd start if I was trying to define what makes good video in the interactive world. It's a little bit like, you know, assuming that the right way to plan a printing press would be to, you know, sharpen the best possible number of quills. It doesn't necessarily start there. The sharpest place I see this is when you're working on brands that run across media already. So it's one thing if you start, and we're working here with you at the moment on stuff, but that's institutionally something about running across media. If you start with a content brand, I'm working on Doctor Who at the moment, I've been working on Top Gear quite a lot. If you start on these brands and you try and think about what makes them special on a platform, it's actually more interesting than what makes them different. So why would video of Doctor Who online be different and therefore special is where I spend most of my professional career thinking about that question. And online, it's probably because it can be more personal to you as an individual. It's something that you can collect, which is a really crucial part of video behaviour online. You know, you collect and forward and share in a way that you don't, in a very instant way, you do that in the online space. So it's something that's more personal, you've got a more direct connection to. It may be just more niche and therefore more interesting to you than something that the economics of broadcasting makes possible for a mainstream broadcaster. It may be something you want to actually directly interact with, change or add to, which is sort of where we started with 4Docs. Can you become a creator as well? So for me, it actually starts with the user. What makes it special for the user is a relationship that's different to your relationship with television as programs. And when you look at that with a brand like Top Gear, you get these fascinatingly reductionist views. So we did a piece of work with the Top Gear team, which is a very big magazine, as you know, as well as a very big website, as well as a reasonably well-known television program. When you start experimenting with what's acceptable online for a brand like Top Gear, you get told by the audience the moment you overstep the mark of what they think it should have been. So if you put some video up on the Top Gear website that doesn't look like it was, you know, shot on the best camera, made in the most high-octane way, they tell you on YouTube. And we did a deliberate experiment. We made a piece of video with Top Gear at Ferrari Maranello with a wobbly camera on some sticks. Didn't look like Top Gear, didn't have charging music. And the people on YouTube said they were going to report us to Top Gear for pretending to be Top Gear. And we were Top Gear. So there's a really important line. What makes it different is what makes it special. But if you are a brand that operates in this space, people have expectations of you. So there's two things. Live up to expectations if you have them, but think about what makes you special rather than different, I think.
Well, your point of your Top Gear story, is it that you can't think of, because it's online, it can
be
rougher, it can't
be crap. Online doesn't equal crap, because certainly with kids, if you look at Doctor Who, if we made crap Doctor Who for kids online, that would be the end of us and the end of the product.
And do you think there was an assumption that in a way online meant you could drop standards?
I think from television people, the assumption is always, not all television people, certainly not Maggie, but from an awful lot of television people, they see online video as a kind of a sort of cut down version of the Lime Grove Studios the BBC would have had in the 1950s. And we just don't start there. You start with what's possible, how you build it from the bottom up. You don't start by cutting back on television. And that's the big opportunity for The Guardian. I think it's all going reasonably well, actually, compared to trying to re-engineer BBC News, which is a gold standard, blue chip, expensive television entity, into this space. You come at it a different way.
Tom, let's hear your opening thoughts on this, and then I want to pick up some of the things we've already heard.
I think Maggie's right. I think it doesn't always have to be different to television. I think some of the things we've shown on the site have been of a quality that they could have appeared very easily on Newsnight. I think the things that John D. McHugh did last week with Guardian Films from Afghanistan was of a quality. I think, you know, Dan's in the audience. You know, Dan and Tanya got footage out of the demonstrations by over Tibet recently that were better than many of the broadcasters by a long way. But I think in terms of our site. Probably one very simple and straightforward reason why we have to do it differently than television is that we don't have the resources of the broadcasters. The BBC is the largest news-gathering organisation in the world. We have huge numbers of cameramen, huge numbers of producers, huge numbers of sat trucks. We have none of those things. So we have to be smarter. But we're also freed of various demands of broadcasters. You know, we have the opportunity to do video when it is appropriate to the story or what we're trying to do. You know, if you work in television, your heart sinks if you're presented to do the latest piece on the inflation figures this morning. You don't have interesting pictures. You're relying on wallpaper shots. It's very, very dull. We do not have to cut video to justify that story. If we choose not to, we can focus on the things that are picture rich. I also think we should be doing things which I think we are doing, but we do not have to create a narrative necessarily in the video we do. Many of our video tells a story, but some of it tells a story when it is embedded and works with the text. Text is still where we primarily focus. Our most popular video of this month so far is Barack Obama's acceptance speech. You know, thousands of people wanted to watch that for understandable reasons, but in the telling of the story of him winning the Democratic nomination, we want to get across more points than he's a very good speaker and he said some interesting things. And that piece of video is fantastic, but it becomes a much more powerful piece of journalism when it's presented with the package of material we have got from our correspondents in the States and analysis and all those sort of things. I also think we should be doing video that is different than a lot of TV, because it's, our video, like our audio, should be of The Guardian and The Observer and Guardian.co.uk. And I think, you know, we've done that, you know, two very straightforward cases. I think we've done that with the seriousness of the foreign reports we've done. You know, TV is increasingly narrowly domestically focused, and I think we've retained doing that. But we've also done that in a, you know, less serious way with the videos that Rebecca did in Vienna with some of the guys who work on the football side, which sort of, you know, quite rough and ready, but do represent the spirit and the humour of things like the Fiverr, the Minute by Minutes, and the Football Daily podcast we're doing, and have been very popular because of that. You know, another point is, I think, why our video, a lot of our video will be unique is, you know, because we should be building on the strengths we already have in an organisation. And, you know, I've mentioned Dan already, David Levine's here. You know, that is that we've got exceptionally brilliant photographers who work for us. And, you know, that is something that we have an opportunity to build on, which gives a video a different, a lot of our video, a different feel and a different look of people who come from a traditional filmmaking background. I also think the final opportunity, I think, in terms of television, is that actually, despite the fact that BBC is meant to be different than the commercial sector, broadcasters in general are pulling out of a lot of, you know, a lot of things that is at the heart of what we do. You know, serious analysis, a lot of more high-end arts coverage, a lot of the more difficult foreign stories that Maggie's talking about. And I think that's also an opportunity and something we've got to build in. So I think, I think video on Guardian.co.uk has got to be different because of the realities of the marketplace we're in, but also different because of the strengths we have and the opportunities we have.
Thank you. I think it kicks us off really well, all four of those. Maggie, I just want to ask you to pick up on this point, because in a way that we should make a distinction here, shouldn't we, between the kind of films you're making with, you know, the 10, 12, 15-minute long films, the Sean Smiths, the Dan Chung's and those things, and the minute and a half bits of video that have to be assembled pretty quickly and put up online. Given what Tom was saying, and given that we're not going to be able to compete with the BBCs and CNNs, etc., in terms of the sort of quick day-to-day stuff, what is it we should be doing, or online outlets like us should be doing?
Well, I think it's the point that you made. I mean, there's two things. You know, the point about the BBC, you know, you can't imitate the BBC and try and turn out a newsroom like the BBC, because we'll just look like amateurs, like the Telegraph have done. Similarly, you can't take over from Reuters doing what Reuters have done in terms of quick news gathering, because they do it in 1 minute, 20 seconds, and they do it brilliantly, so we shouldn't be trying to compete with that. I think what we need to do is make ourselves absolutely distinctive. And I've just spent this morning with 15 NGOs from all over, you know, MSF, all those people, and the subject has been, what are we going to to do about foreign, you know, foreign coverage? Because ITN have come out and said, we're only going to do foreign coverage on the news. I've been trying for 5 years, you know, from Dispatches Panorama, and I can see it's going down, 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 down. The best thing that the editor of This World, who we won an Emmy for, said, fantastic film. It was terrible about the viewership figures, wasn't it? 700,000 people watched it. So the difficulty for broadcasters now is they're not getting the hits. And so if you're a commissioning editor of This World like Karen O'Connor, you're going to get your ass kicked because you've made a great film and you've only got 700,000 hits. So what happens? Karen O'Connor is not going to commission those kind of films next year. And so we really have to realise that there's a fantastic opportunity for us at The Guardian to pick up on this, to provide that kind of exceptional, different, challenging foreign coverage that the broadcasters are shying away from because they're in a very competitive world and there's real problems for them. So
in a way, that thing I was saying, if we can't take on the BBC and CNN, in a way you're saying actually we can because they're vacating territory.
Well, two things. We can't take them on in short form because short form you can't do a Reuters package better than Reuters. That's my view. It means bang, 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 basically.
Yeah.
Who, what, where, when. But I think there is a place that's going there. Zimbabwe, what in terms of TV wise, ITN are doing it. Somalia, two people have been to make films in Somalia. Both Zimbabweans, well, Somalia has just been turned down by Panorama from us because of their high security team said that they weren't prepared to do it. You know, we take safety very, very seriously here. And, you know, touch wood, we made a lot of films in dangerous places and things have been okay. But you can see that they're moving away from foreign for readership, for viewership, for all sorts of reasons within the institutions. And we can move in there. And that's what The Guardian is. We're an international newspaper. And I think it's a fantastic opportunity.
I think that's really. I think The Guardian's kind of a movement, isn't it, as well? If you get away from this notion of which platform you're in, it's a sort of movement.
A religious cause, is it?
It's a cult. It's essentially some kind of cult. Facetiously, I don't mean that, but it's a community of interest. It represents a number of different communities of interest in a coalition. It's like a political party would have been once upon a time. And the thing about broadcasters is they're not that, by and large. The ones that are anything like that are niche cult organisations, or they're HBO and they have a sort of obsession with quality, whatever. The good news about broadcasters is they are splitting completely down the middle because, logically and rationally, the mass media bit of them, which is the bit that is deep in their DNA, has to become more and more mass and chase more and more mass audience, which I believe will make broadcasting a more successful medium as a broadcast medium and less good at doing the middle ground and niche things, because they will be really going for mass stuff. It will be mass sport. It will be mass entertainment. It will be a platform for the launching of the new for the foreseeable future. And there's a question about public service broadcasting. As a non-executive at Ofcom, I spent a lot of time thinking about it. But whichever way you go with that, there is a real schism inside all of the broadcasters that I ever work with around the world. Because their logical, their head says follow the mass audience, however big that mass is, and that's a great opportunity if you can get into those communities of interest, and you can because you already represent a big part of that. I'm convinced of it.
Saranga.
Yeah, sure. The other interesting thing that I've certainly seen, I think touched on it a couple of times before, is the fact that for whatever reason, broadcasters are very much approaching the sort of online or internet opportunity as an opportunity for them to repackage what they already have and sort of shift more boxes. To be honest, which fundamentally misses the point. You know, there's an extent to which you can do that. Of course, if you own the rights to a particular football match and you can put it online, then you'll get more people watching that as well. But that's pretty much where that model starts to fail. After that, you sort of very quickly collapse off the cliff. For whatever reason, print publishers generally, and I mean, Blinks doesn't work with The Guardian in any particular way. The only thing I know about The Guardian is as a reader, but certainly over in the US, where we have more relationships with print publishers, for whatever reason, there's been a sort of broader acceptance of the fact that, video is an interesting component, but it's just one component of an overall sort of much more multifaceted experience. People want to read certain things. They want to see photos and pictures and diagrams of certain things, and they want to experience certain things in video. The extent to which you can do that, really continue to tell the same stories, continue to expose the same issues and so on and so forth, tell really keep doing what you do already, but but do it using a new tool that allows you to sort of say certain things in a slightly different way. If you can pull that off, I think there's actually a lot of opportunity. But, you know, how you do that is, of course, is the challenge.
Can I put something to you that, in a way, you're more qualified than almost anybody else to answer, which is, what actually are people looking for from video on the internet? What are they actually typing into Blinks and searching for? What kind of things are they seeking?
Okay. So, you know, if you... there are sort of multiple levels at which you can sort of analyze that sort of data. You know, the obvious sort of ground level is just what are people actually typing in and so on. It starts to get interesting when you sort of go a bit beyond that and look at, you know, when they do a search, what do they actually click on? Do they look at more than one thing? If so, what things and so on? And what their sort of path or trajectory is through through content discovery, I suppose. And what's interesting is that sort of very, very factual things often kick people off. So, you know, they'll turn up on the site and they'll say, okay, well, I want to catch up on what's in the news today. I want to catch up on a particular event that I know has occurred, either because I've read about it or because someone's told me about it. And it could be anything, you know, from something quite serious to something quite trivial. What's fascinating about the web, and this is sort of what the web's really good at, not just on video, but on everything, on every sort of different media that it sort of provides, is all of the sort of echoes that a given event or piece of information creates. So, you know, of course, you watch, you know, you might actually, you know, as a Brit, you might decide that, well, the BBC is where I go to sort of get the basic facts of what happened on a particular story. But then you're actually very interested beyond that in the analysis and the other things that people have to think and say and so on about it. And of course, part of the excitement is the fact that you can do some of that yourself and you can be, as a user, involved in that creation process. But people are also very interested in the echoes from different places. So we get things like, I mean, the Obama story is a great example of this. We had a lot of people turn up at the site, type in the word Obama. On the day that he did the speech, but they didn't just watch one video, which is what you'd think. If they just wanted to watch the speech, they'd presumably just click on one and just go and watch it. They didn't. They'd do that, but then they'd also watch, in the US, for example, the Fox News coverage or the CNN coverage of the same topic. And the reason for that is because they all identify with a particular, you know, political viewpoint, and they want to see what their man has to say about this speech and what it means and so on. So there's it's a pretty multifaceted, quite complex way that people already look at the content and the fact that they can look at many different aspects of a given piece of information. So it's all about sort of making sure you continue to represent that in a way that's sort of coherent with, you know, your brand and the people who look to you to learn things.
There's an interesting thing that Tom was saying about that, I think, which is this notion of adding value by using multiple media within a story. You can embed video within a story. Two things come out of that, which are they're sort of antagonistic, because the user will come and do what Saranga just described and not notice the rest of the context of your story. And some users will come and notice the context of your story and then go and do what Saranga described. So you sort of have two things in mind. It's like having varifocals on when you're trying to create the thing. What happens if somebody comes straight in just looking for that in a very directed way? And what happens if I am doing the directing as an editorial individual?
This relates to a discussion that was happening in this place yesterday.
Really?
Well, it was about how people are accessing our content, and the revelation was that only 30% of it is coming through the front page,
yeah.
And they are just searching for that individual item. So in a way, that would extend to what you're saying, which is they'll come to our bit of video without any of the packaging around it. So it's a relevant point. I wanted to ask Tom about politics a bit, since you've brought it up. And in the... American context, we've really seen how powerful that is. But a big example was in this 2006 campaign, the senator from Virginia who was caught referring to a Native American, as it happened, as Mukaka, which is a little used but abusive term. And it undid his campaign. And the point was, it was just somebody with a video camera. And what we haven't yet talked about is that, the notion that the big difference with conventional broadcast TV is the user and how central they are. Is that a difference that will impact on Guardian.co.uk in a big way? Or, Tom, what do you think about it?
In terms of getting things out of the user?
Well, it's just that may be the thing that makes it a different medium, because it's 30 seconds from people with cameras rather than, you know, a Newsnight crew.
Well, I think, you know, we... Two points about that. I think, you know...
You might need to speak up a bit and come nearer to the microphone.
Yeah. I think... This sounds like a really obvious point, but, you know, video is when it's strongest, when you're actually sort of witnessing something. You know, Barack Obama giving his speech, you know, a candidate saying something that he wouldn't say in a TV studio. The expression on somebody's face when they're being interviewed about, you know, a painful or difficult topic, or an expression on a politician's face, or, you know, the riot police gassing protesters in China. All those things, you know, that is when film is at its most powerful. So I do think, you know, anything you can get, you know, video is becoming much lighter and easier media for people to do, which is why, you know, increasingly loads of people do it in their everyday life. Citizens, journalists, punters, whatever you want to call them, are using it, and that's something we want to get in on, I think. And that's also about your reporting. You know, we did, you know, actually, the films we did out of the New Hampshire primary actually had one of those moments with, you know, somebody who went along to, you know, one of Rudy's rallies, and one of his key, you know, operatives saying rather crass things about Muslims, which, you know, was probably the thing we did most on the site during that month that had most traction in the US media. You know, it went across, it got picked up by, you know, the big blogs like Talking Point Memo, and actually the guy had to stand down as part of the campaign. You know, Rudy's campaign was already in slightly free fall, but I think that was, you know, one thing that slightly put him off. So I do think that, you know, we should be doing more of that. You know, I think...
CBC just have an interesting thing in their site where they actually went out and they gave, there's like 10 Taliban leaders speaking into their mobile phones about, you know, how they're going to fight the Brits. And it's completely unmediated. It's really fascinating and interesting and very simple to do. I mean, they just sort of picked up the phones and sent them in. So that's what I'm saying about the process being exciting, because we can kind of do that stuff, you know, whereas you can't at the BBC, or there's just much more flexibility and movement.
But it hasn't yet happened in British politics the way it has in American politics. You don't have citizen journalists with video cameras catching out, you know, Oliver Letwin or whatever. That doesn't seem to be part of our... I don't know why I particularly pick on him, but he just seems a very natural candidate. You know, that doesn't seem to be part of our, you know, culture yet. And yet you'd think a website like guardian.co.uk or something else would be filling in that gap, partly for the reasons Maggie's saying. The big broadcasters would fight shy of it.
Well, definitely. I think, you know, time will tell. It'll be interesting to see the forthcoming by-election, whether there's any sense of that. You know, we do have a much more enclosed political system than the states. You know, the whole point of New Hampshire is, you know, a bunch of Washington insiders have to go out and go and meet the, you know, the farmers in a remarkably small rural state. Whereas, you know, in the last general election, Blair was entirely surrounded by his people at all points of the campaign, apart from when he was sort of in a very staged manner, you know, thrown in front of rather disgruntled voters in a TV studio. So it's hard to do, but I do think we will see more of that. You know, I think that I think as an organisation we've got to approach that with, to a degree, is a sense of humility. You know, I think we don't have the reach of a publication of something of the BBC, and we can't expect people to send us stuff in as if we are the mothership and they are there to serve us. I think it's as much aggregation and pointing to that sort of thing and picking up on it, and that's something we've always done on the site. So I think that's one key point about that. But I do, you know, there are, you know, it's interesting, I've got sort of clips of video on the computer, you know, of how we've done things, I think, in terms of politics in different ways than I can. Do you want me to show you?
Oh, you've got some examples, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd love that.
You know, I've got something from The Telegraph I was going to show first.
Does it,
do you want to see that?
Meet Maggie's dismal standard? Because we want to see it.
I love this, but I just want to show it because it
do
always
you,
makes
we
me laugh.
Are we dim lights, or is that...
On the politics show, where 42 days feels like a lunchtime. This week we're asking a simple question: what are the Tories for, and indeed against? The restaurant is full, the sun is shining, at least intermittently, and I'm joined by Anne Widdecombe and our political editor Andrew Porter. So all is well with the world.
Do you want me to stop?
Also coming up,
I love it. I love it. But I'm a real sad political geek. I'm just going to show you that. That was sort of when 42 days was in the news. I'm going to show you what. It's 48 minutes.
48 minutes.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying.
I would be prepared to.
He actually said that, didn't he?
Now, this is what we did on the site on the day of the 42 day vote, which I think was, which involves Shahani, who's here, and Eric and Elliot, which I, you know, I think is something actually that, you know, it's sort of in the Guardian website should be doing. And actually, I think it's something that you do, the broadcasters wouldn't have presented this in quite this way.
I was panicking on the first day. The fact that it'd been about 10 hours before I was told why I was actually there. I was sitting in there crying, thinking, oh my God, am I ever going to get out of there? And the scariest thing was that 28 days, I know they can keep you for 28 days, and a minute goes like an hour, and an hour like a day like a year inside a cell. It's like if you put yourself in your bathroom, seal all the windows, and literally taking a cushion and a blanket, or not a cushion, just a blanket, and you sleep in there for 24 hours, then you'll feel how it feels to be in a cell.
I think you probably get the idea, though. I think, you know, you sort of get the idea. You know, the Telegraph, I think, I have a sneaking love for Right On, the Telegraph's weekly political show, and I think there are some interesting things they're trying to do there. But fundamentally, they are trying to mimic, you know, a BBC, yeah. You know, a BBC Westminster TV show to talk about politics. Now, it's not directly comparable what we did last week, but I do think, you know, it does directly address the key issue they were debating in Parliament that day. It is about the decisions that our elected politicians were making on our behalf. And I feel, to a degree, we managed to do something that was off the web. You know, I it was very much in the spirit of the Guardian and the Observer as well, I think. And I think it succeeded. So I do think there are opportunities for us there.
Don't mechanical point about that. I was facetiously bored, but I was actually bored as well. Because I don't need a title sequence, because I don't need to wander across the living room, settle down in a sofa, sit down, work out where my cup of tea is. I don't need a title sequence. I chose to click on it. So why do you give me a title sequence that looks like a half-assed piece of television? Don't need it. It serves a function in television, which is, it's on, better sit down, it's on, everybody sit down, keep quiet. I've already done that piece in my own mind. So it's a real classic example of a broadcast mindset moving into this space. Don't need it.
I wanted to just tease out something about our reaction to it as well, which is we all groaned at the idea of 48 minutes. And is that to do with the notion of watching it on a computer? I tread carefully here. I'll tell you why I'm asking it first, because there's a bit of evidence. First of all, I tread carefully because I wonder if this is the equivalent of older people always thinking a long article online you have to print out, right, because you couldn't read it on a screen. But there is actually data saying that a very high percentage do not like watching television on video, rather, online, and if they have the choice, they would rather watch it on a TV screen, and even lower figures watching it on a mobile. And it's very interesting, given that everyone says the mobile is the future, there is still a resistance to watching things of length on a PC screen. I wonder what your feelings are about I hear all of you on that, and then we're going to open it up. Tom first.
I think that research is true, but I think, you know, tastes are also made. And I think, you know, just as YouTube really created an appetite online for very short, very sharp video, I think the success of the iPlayer is going to change tastes and people's expectation of what they would and wouldn't watch on
a screen, on a TV,
on a screen.
On a computer screen, yeah.
And I think, you know, clearly, you know, loads of people around the country are sitting down and watching their computer screens for an hour to catch up on BBC programmes, and that will create an expectation is that is the sort of thing you do with your time,
yeah.
And it's not odd. And I think, you know, just as I said earlier, I think there's, you know, an opportunity for us to go where broadcasters now don't go. You know, I've got something I won't share because nobody can hear it, but, you know, there's something Slate did a little while ago where Clive James just did, you know, quite long sit-down interviews with, you know, quite big-name authors. Now, that's the sort of thing that actually wouldn't even get on BBC Four now, but it is the sort of thing that we might do on the side. You know, you don't have to get an enormous number of viewers immediately. It's something that has long lasting. It's something that people will come to all the time. It's something that people will find through search. If one had, for instance, picked a name out of the ether, you know, an interview with Michael Frayn about his career in the theatre and as an author and as a journalist, you know, people are going to find that through search a year later,
yeah,
through Google. It doesn't all have to be on the moment. And I think that's the sort of thing we can, or through Blinks or whatever. That is the sort of thing that we can do, I think, as an organisation. And actually, we're enormously qualified to do.
Yeah. I don't expect you to be hospitable to our guests. I'm making up for it. Yeah. Maggie, you wanted to get in with something.
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, the thing about search, you know, and one of the difficulties we're at now is what have we got where and where does it go? I mean, one of the problems with video is we're in a situation where we have the immediacy of things. We've got Dan's things, we've got Guardian Films things, we've got Reuters all coming in. I think we need to create a sense of identity in that if you really want to find out what's happening in Iraq, what the best stuff is, not necessarily made by just The Guardian, but, you know, great films that we've brought in from outside, that we create a place which is the sort of content quality. So actually you don't have to search all around, because I don't know about anybody else, but I don't really have time to go through YouTube and go on a kind of hunting fishing mission. I want to know, if I want to see really good video, really good analysis, that actually I'm going to go to The Guardian and it's all there. All those journalistic standards they have, all that journalistic background is going to be packaged in a place that I can find it very easily. And if I go there and I'm committed to that, which I think our viewers, readers are, well, I'm going to get it on The Guardian. So I think we have to establish ourselves really clearly in that area. And to do that, we need to sort of amalgamate our content within certain clear areas, possibly, I think, country areas.
And that linking would be, we'd be totally ecumenical. We wouldn't mind linking to a great little 2 minutes on Telegraph TV, for example.
Well, I mean, you know, in terms of in terms of, you know, Google or YouTube or whatever. I mean, some of the most interesting links were Sean Smith film that we did. Were coming in from Vietnam vet groups who'd found it on YouTube in the States, who saw a film that was telling them more about American troops than they're seeing on any of their broadcasters, so they're coming in to us. So I just think we have to build up that reputation that you will find something different, you won't have to watch any crap, and it'll be really on the button. But we need to establish that there.
So we have a function of, we've watched all this crap, so you don't have to, that kind
yeah,
of
Yeah, no, we've filtered
pitch.
It. It's
yeah, that's
all
good.
There, and
that's
it's
good.
All together, short, long, whatever.
So, Saranga, I found these figures, and admittedly, they do predate the iPlayer, but they did find that 44% of people would like to watch to download and watch video on TV, compared with only 30% who said they would do that on a computer. But what's your feeling about that issue?
Yeah, those sorts of stats tend to sort of oversimplify the picture. If you look in detail, what you find very, very quickly is that there are a lot of people who will watch very long form video actually on a computer screen. Particularly if you go to certain age groups. It's a fascinating thing for me at our company. We have a very young employee base for various reasons, and most of them, if they're under 25, basically don't watch TV anymore. And they watch just as much TV content as you and I would, but they watch all of it on their PC for various reasons. So I think the thing there is that it's... sometimes.
Yeah.
My company's one of the few where you can do that and not get into trouble, I guess. But I think, you know, Maggie's point earlier is actually the one that exposes this issue, which is it's nothing to do with the length of the content. It's about whether it's good or not. If it's good and it needs to be long, then you'll sit there and watch it. If it's a film and you want to watch it for an hour and a half, then of course you'll watch it if it's good and if it demands that length. If it isn't, then you won't sit there. That's the difference. There's also a contextual difference to the way you treat a computer versus a television to an extent. So, for example, you know, if you're in a hotel room and you're doing something else anyway, then you might just flick on a TV in the background and have it running. And it could be a bit like that Telegraph TV thing, and you wouldn't really care that it's not perfect because it's only one of the many things you're doing. But of course, if you're sitting there in front of your computer staring at it, then it's got to be good enough to actually, you know, engage you for the 38 or 48 minutes that it is. So I think it's easy to sort of oversimplify that. The point is, if you've created something that has to be 20 minutes long, but it's really good for 20 minutes, then the person who wants to watch it will sit there and watch it. The fact that it's on one screen versus another screen doesn't really make a difference. If you go beyond the West, then you see exactly the same trends appearing with mobile devices as well. So again, I find it personally quite hard to imagine that I'd sit there and watch a film or even a 20-minute show on a mobile phone screen, but actually people in Korea and Japan do that all the time. So again, as long as it's a show that you actually wanted to watch, you probably will. It'll take time, and there may be certain sort of tipping point products like the iPlayer here, for example, that will sort of, you know, cascade the change, but people will do it by and large. The other interesting thing is the point you just brought up, which is the one around to what extent, and I think newspapers, you know, hold a really interesting position in all of this. You know, to what extent can you become really the editorial or almost taste decision point for content on the web? The problem with the web is there's so much stuff, and a lot of it is crap, that, you know, for most of us, for certain things, you know, we don't really have the time to figure out what to watch, what to read, etc. It's not just video. This is, you know, this applies absolutely to text and anything else as well. And the New York Times, for example, has a very, very strong belief on this, that they really believe that their role in the future is basically as, you know, the guardian of the Guardian of the particular type of taste in politics that a person who reads the New York Times is interested in. And so the idea is you can go there and click on their Iraq button, and they will have assembled all the articles, of course, many from their own site, but also from other sites, that represent what you think what they think you will want to read if you're a New York Times reader. I don't know if that's right or wrong. I can certainly see that in certain areas it makes a lot of sense. Of course, what it doesn't do, or what it's hard to do in that sort of approach, is to cover all the millions of tiny topics that maybe don't get the, you know, it's one thing to cover it on the big stories and so on, but can you keep doing that across every single possible topic? I don't know, and that's perhaps where more user-driven discovery is essential. But that's a very interesting opportunity. Again, The Guardian is pretty unique because of the way you're set up commercially, that you can actually experiment probably more than some of the other newspapers can in this country with this concept of, okay, we'll produce our own content, but we'll also link to the other stuff if it's relevant, if we think it makes sense for our readers.
Here's where I mentioned The Page, the American website that's an offshoot of Time magazine, thepage.time.com. Its focus is on the American election. What's different is they're culling all the pieces, but also video, and they're doing it brilliantly, so that the moment there is that 30-second-long exchange that revealed, you know, a flash of McCain anger, it's there in between two links to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, as if it's just part of the range. But they have no problem at all with linking to their rivals, so Newsweek and other things. It's a possible direction we might want to go. Say something on this.
Well, it's another of those fascinating dichotomies, isn't it? Because you sort of there is this accepted wisdom in the web business that you want people inside your territory on Guardian Unlimited, and then you want to keep them there. And yet I find it paradoxical that the world's most successful website is a big white page into which you type a word, and then you get back another white page with a load of links on called Google, and then they send you to another website and make an absolute fortune in the process. So I find it really rather interesting that this old school idea of you've got to hold them in our territory continues to hang on. The thing that frustrates me most as a Guardian reader is that the cross-linking is appalling off Guardian Unlimited. To the rest of the web.
Right.
It's as if the rest of the web didn't exist.
In the sense of not enough of it, when it doesn't work?
There, broadly speaking, isn't any of it. Comparative to what should be happening in the rest of the space. We've had this conversation. We know it's happening.
But let us into this.
But the true fact of that is that that isn't the way the web goes. If you have what Maggie is describing, they will come back to you again for it. And the way I characterise that is your strength isn't as a Guardian with a small g. Your strength isn't as a channel. It's as I think the thing we're entering is a period where we're all at war for the attention of users and viewers. And we've always been at war for the attention. The war's about attention. There's plenty of content. There's plenty of technology, plenty of platforms. The scarce thing is attention, which is what Maggie just said. If you repeatedly repay people's attention by giving them something back that is valuable to them, they'll come back again, which Google proves and Blinks proves.
So in the case that Maggie was mentioning, The Guardian might direct you to a really good 10-minute item on PBS on American television, but you would come back to The Guardian after that experience. You wouldn't go back to PBS. You'd thank The Guardian for recommending
it. I might do both.
Yeah.
But I'm coming back to The Guardian because The Guardian pointed it to me in the first place.
Great.
The confident business knows that that's where the value is, and not in having it on your site and trying to lock it down.
And see, the thing about what we already have that confidence. I mean, people believe us. They can. Mm-hmm. They know. The Guardian, they're the people to go to, and so it's like an open door. We just get them in and make sure we pay them back, as you say.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's absolutely
excellent. Right. Let's widen this out and take contributions from here. There is a microphone which is needed for recording purposes. There's Vikram Dodd at the back, the second row from the back. And any other hands going up now, so I can clock them while we. All right, we'll wait till we hear from this. Perhaps for the record team, who are.
Vikram Dodd, I'm a reporter on Home News. I was struck by the 42-day video which Tom flagged up, and I thought it was interesting in that one of the reasons it might not appear on mainstream channels is it comes... You could easily criticise it for coming from a biased point of view, as in it's not directly relevant on the day. You know, it was a very good hit and it certainly worked. But is there an opportunity that, you know, something like the Telegraph could become almost like a Fox News video channel, or Fox News video, The Guardian becomes... If you're using the States, a bit like MSNBC. But is there not also a danger that that could bleed through to some of the work senior executives here have tried to do about The Guardian being that fair, trusted news source where any gains you make there are offset on the video side because, you know, video doesn't like nuance, likes strong narratives, likes emotion, and you would have, in a sense, different parts of the organisation going in a different way. So while the paper exists, you want that sort of, you know, solid... You know, Tories can read us and vaguely believe what we're saying, whilst video and other parts go more and more in a sort of, you know, shouty sort of, you know, pushing point of view.
Yeah.
And the second question, which is obviously very, very easy, is what evidence is there that all of this stuff raises any revenue to support expensive stuff like journalism? And where are you on that? Where are we on that curve? And where are we in figuring that out?
All right, well, let me put the first one to Tom. This notion that we might lose the cool neutrality we're trying to cultivate on the paper if the web stuff is very hot and partisan. Why don't you go for that first?
I think, you know, the site has got to be, you know, be like the paper. You know, I don't think that video was presented as expressing everything you needed to know about the issue. Clearly it doesn't. You know, but I think it was a part of the coverage of that debate and the issue around it, just as an authored piece in G2 would, or a comment piece on the comment pages. It's not presented, I don't think, like a piece of news coverage. And I think, you know, we can do that on the site. And I think the distinction is, you know, being clear to your users where whatever piece of content fits within that divide in our coverage between comment, features, those sort of areas, and our hard news, which has to remain sort of pure, as it were. And I don't think it does. If we'd got a piece on the issues, we would have done it in a different way, but it wasn't. That was an interview with somebody who's been locked up.
What Rickman was raising, though, is an interesting question about the temptation. Might there not be a temptation to push it in a kind of partisan Air America, MSNBC sort of slash and burn way, because that will bring hits?
I mean, you should, there's no argument about this, but from a commercial point of view, you should go hot rather than cool if you want to get eyeballs on the computer screen. So that's the evidence from anywhere else.
That's not really our function, actually. I mean, it's as Tom says, it's a kind of an editorial judgment. You know, when we go hot, we go hot, and then we lose the thing that we have, which is actually people trust us. So if we're all over the shop on video, going hot rather than cold, then, you know, in a year or two's time, why come to us? So I just think you apply
short-term
the same editorial...
Short-term gain, but you'd lose them.
Yeah.
I have to say that was exactly the conclusion that was drawn in this discussion yesterday about ratings, if you like, searching for clicks, which is you would get an immediate lift and you'd get a lot of, you know, if you put Paris Hilton, Britney Spears every day, you'd do well. But then long term, you would lose the core reason why people are coming to you.
It also relates to another topic, you know, is always a question, the sort of thing. Is Siobhan still here? Has she gone?
She's gone, so you're free to say
whatever you like. But, you know, that we debate all the time is that, you know, we have to be... Well, it's sort of thing Harriet probably has to deal with all the time as well, is that, you know, our coverage... You know, we have to argue that we have to be judged on our coverage as a whole on an issue. You know, if you made a short film on the you know, to make a sort of extreme case, on the victims of a suicide bombing in Jerusalem... That would not, of itself, present a balanced picture of the conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians. But it would be a worthwhile piece of journalism. And I think, you know, you have to argue that you have to look at our coverage as a whole. And that's something we're attacked for a lot on the website. And, you know, because people do just arrive through Google or, to a degree, willfully decide to misrepresent our coverage. Also, about the commercial thing, you know, the one piece of evidence that we actually make money about it is the fact that Adam Freeman and the commercial department are always nagging us to do more video, more video, more video, because that is what people want to advertise on the site at the moment.
Those ads, you know, that go at the beginning of the video.
Yeah. Really? You know, if anybody remembers Adventure by, was it Davidoff or whoever, the new fragrance being advertised by Ian McEwan, I saw that about a million times and it so got me down, but we do make a lot of money selling those adverts. Yeah. And actually, that is an expansion.
Bucking the trend. Every client I've got has not got enough inventory in video to sell the ads. And I was in a conversation last night with somebody from WPP who said they're now routinely recommending that their ad spend on television, 5% of it next year is diverted to video online to clients.
Wow. Dan is here, and why don't you introduce yourself for the recording and explain why you have a key role in all this?
I've really got a key role in this. I'm Dan Chung, a photographer at The Guardian, and I make video along with other photographers. Now, it's just on that, the difference between what we do in video and what is done in the paper is that we don't have the restorative balance from the right very often. I don't think I've seen any video that has been authored or from a, you know, anti-left-wing establishment viewpoint. It just doesn't exist. And I'd like to ask, you know, people on the panel why they think that is and why they think they can do that as opposed to...
And are you referring here to the sort of minute-long on-the-day stuff or the longer Guardian films?
Any of it.
Any of it.
You know... If you say,
I never look at it in that perspective. I think, is that good journalism? Is that interesting? I never look at it like that. Is that good journalism? Is that interesting? Are we bringing people to places that they don't go? If we go to Somalia and do the story, we'll discover that, as we know, that the Americans are running a ghost war in Somalia through the Ethiopians that's leading to an absolutely terrible humanitarian catastrophe. Now, that could be seen as being left wing. It's actually the truth. So, you know, I don't look at it like that. I think our journalism is attempting to be good journalism.
Do you think it's a weakness, Dan, that we don't have that?
I think, there are two ways of bringing balance in the paper, which we do all the time. One is by having comment from opposing viewpoints, which we don't tend to have in video on the website. And the other way is by our reporters giving the opposite line, you know, normally in the third pass somewhere down, saying, and today the government responded by saying X. Yeah. And we tend not to do that, mainly because we don't have an awful lot of authored reporters' voiceovers on top of video. We tend to let people say it themselves, which is nothing wrong with that. But, you know, at some point, I think there needs to be some level of balancing in video, especially for people who come at the video from off-site, you know, from people using Blinks or Google or whatever else. They come to it cold. They don't come into it with the context of pages and pages of Guardian video, Guardian text with a video inside it. They just get the video. And
in the American election, besides authored films by Gary Young and Suzanne Goldenberg, we should have got somebody from a more right of centre, a more sort of pro-McCain, sympathetic perspective. Would that have been?
I think both Gary and Suzanne are quite nuanced in the way in which they make their video. Is probably slightly different to the way a lot of the videos on the site. The fact that they are actually talking over stuff or directing, you know, they're talking to different people in a way that does sometimes have balance. You do get right-wing viewpoints from, you know, the New Hampshire films, all the stuff that came out of the primaries, I think was actually quite good, and it gave people from both sides of the divide a chance to speak in their own words. I'm not sure that it happens very much on the rest of the site, and certainly in domestic British politics, it doesn't seem to happen.
Tom, do you want to respond to this? Because I'm sorry to keep Antonin Saranga at us, but it's a quite internal Guardian question. I'm interested, Tom, your view on it.
I don't know what I think about that on the whole. I did consider it a bit more. I do think we need to experiment more with doing sort of voiceovers by reporters and involving them more, definitely. And, you know, we haven't done enough of that with, you know, Paul was a bit of an exception in terms of that, involving people in the home news. But, you know, one thing occurs to me where I slightly disagree is I think, you know, we're a paper. Part of our online success globally and particularly in America has been driven by the war on terror and among the American public, you know, with so much of the big American papers going along with a lot of the American administration was saying people in the States looking for a different viewpoint. You know, a lot of our success has been built on that. But I also think, you know, actually, if you watch the stuff that John Dee has done out of Afghanistan, and I think the stuff over years that Sean has done out of Iraq, I actually think you end up with more sympathy for American troops there, and actually the situation they find themselves in, which I, you know, it's not sort of disagreeing with what you're saying, but I think it is a paradox about the sort of less reporter-driven style we have adopted to a degree. To a degree, I do think if you watch the film about Lost in Translation that Guardian Films produced for the site last week, you know, you can see, you know, it illustrates perfectly, you know, one of the problems with trying to sort of have troops on the ground from a foreign country in, you know, a country they know fundamentally very little about. But you also don't end it just saying, you know, aren't they awful, you know, colonialists. You also end up with some real sympathy for the American troops there. And I think that's another issue. I think you're right. We have to always consider balance and wonder and look again and again at what we're doing and whether it's working and whether we've got the balance right.
Well, on a simple level, you're saying you don't feel we need balance in the videos themselves as opposed to, you know, in the site context as a whole.
I think it depends what the videos are about. I think if it's a video, the sort of thing...
42 days video, you know...
Well, the 42 days video, I think, is an example of... Its nearest print equivalent, I think, is the sort of thing that might appear in G2, which would be an interview with, you know, one person or more people, an interview with the people who've been detained under anti-terrorism legislation and their experience with that. And it is about their experience, and that is the aim of the piece. And I think then you don't particularly need, you know, somebody to stand up in the middle of it with a huge red card saying, you know, 7/7 happened, you know, this is not just completely isolated invention of deranged and paranoid politicians. So things like that, I think. Other things, I think, a piece about Somalia, you know, a piece about, you know, protests in China, I think those are things we need to have, be very careful about balance. So I think it's all about the form that you're trying to, you know, do.
I'm very curious what prompts the question. What particularly bugs you?
The thing that we bring to the party more than anything else as an organisation is in-depth analysis and nuanced thinking about things. And I think it's actually quite hard to do in a fly-on-the-wall context. I'm not saying it's not impossible. I think the stuff that you do in Iraq and Afghanistan, Somalia, is well suited to it. But I'm thinking far more about the day in, day out stuff that a lot of the people in this room would be producing. Much shorter, a couple of hours. Things. You know, how do you bring the restorative balance? How do you bring the nuances and the context to it without actually saying it in a voiceover, or do you think you not need to say it? And that's the sort of thing.
Especially freighted, loaded this issue because people are coming to the video cold, if you like, from the outside without any of the Guardian history. This is a big one. I'm just keen to get other people in. If it's on this topic, that would be obviously good to keep this particular thread going on. Is it on this topic, John?
Yeah.
It is. So, are you on this topic as well? I don't know your name, unfortunately. What I will do is we'll take John. Are you on this topic too? Because then we'll go straight back to you as well. Yeah. Good. So John, and then back.
Hi, John Dennis from the audio department. I mean, just to pick up on what Dan was saying, and to, Tom, you're saying that it's really important that everyone, that people see our individual items of our content in the context of the whole of our content. But the reality is, people are only seeing the individual items, and that I just think is a real problem, which I would like to know how we're going to resolve it ultimately. I mean, well, I think you know, with in the case of a comment article, a few years ago when there was a, I think it was a Charlie Brooker thing that got picked up and it kind of whizzed around the web, and people threw their hands up in horror here because they realised that it hadn't really been, in truth, signposted as comment when you looked at it on the web. It was clear what it was when it was in the guide, but when it was on the web, you couldn't tell at that time that it was a comment piece necessarily.
This was an article making a joke about the assassination of George W. Bush.
Yes.
People who read it externally thought that it was a serious comment piece. Actually, it was just a joke in a very clearly jokey context. Sorry? They thought it was a Guardian leader, right? Yeah. Guardian editorial. But this was our new editorial position.
So the point,
instead, it was a satirical column in a satirical location, which you knew if you read it on paper, but you didn't know online.
Exactly. Yeah. And the paper has this problem that, you know, they had the problem last week with the soldier writing in the first person about his experiences in Afghanistan. Everything needs to be clearly signposted. And, you know, you're saying, okay, you know, when you hear the guy that was held for 28 days, you know, about his experience, that you don't need to be reminded of the 7/7 thing. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not totally convinced that that's the case. You know, in terms of the sort of balance and in terms of, you know, the context. Well, are we offering the context when people go to our video? How do we guide them on to say, look, you've got to look at this in the rest in the context of the whole of our coverage?
You have to be opportunistic. People are grown up, you know.
Do you want to come in on this? Well, I just, because there's so many people here who want to get in who haven't had a chance to speak. This is good. We will. We'll turn to the panel. Yeah, let's hear from you first, and then we'll bring back the panel.
To that point, but a sort of parallel problem, something that I worry about is, you know, we talk about 30-second clips of Obama, and, you know, we have people experimenting with mobile phones, putting up clips, and kind of worry about the YouTubification, if you like, of it. And, you know, how can we justify doing sort of more crafted, lengthier pieces? You know, okay, Guardian Films is doing a lot of them now, but in the longer run, you talk about 700,000 people, you know, as kind of bad figures, but we'd love to have a tenth of that for some of the pieces we do. Is there a future for doing long pieces as opposed to the kind of temptation to do cheaper, quick turnaround YouTube style stuff?
Thank you. Did you want to get in as well on this?
Yeah, I mean, it is related. I'm Martin Hodgson, I work on the news desk. Do you have much information on where people click through from? I mean, do people read the story first and then click to video, or do they just do a video search and click through to the paper? And that's going to the website, because that's going to affect the content, isn't it? Because You look at some internet video and web, newspaper websites, there's a story and there's an accompanying, might be an audio slideshow, it might be a video. Sometimes it can be exactly the same as the print story. It's basically the reporter read out their story. Sometimes it's something quite different. That's going to, I mean, how people arrive at the stuff is going to affect the
expert
content.
Knowledge on that particular point.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean,
people have already said it a couple of times. I don't know the numbers for your particular site, but you will be like all the other sites. And the reality is the vast chunk of your traffic, potentially the majority of it, will actually come from people doing a search and coming in cold. And that's the problem, right? Because it's one thing when you have an article like this where there's text, there's a headline, there's a lot of context, basically, in a video in the middle of it. Whereas the thing we watched earlier, you know, a much more sort of movie-style experience of just very, very little other branding or contextual information and just a play button. So in that sort of case, there's no reason why anyone would ever, you know of The Guardian, click onto anything else to find out a bit more about the context of this particular story. They would just watch that. And obviously, if that was an extremely polemic point of view, then you might have an issue there.
So. Mac, you very much wanted to get in on the John Dennis point. You said it was sort of, we can't be that paternalistic.
I didn't want to be paternalistic. I just think people are kind of, they know what they're getting and they put it in context. But I wanted to get in on the point that you made, just very quickly.
Yes, please, yeah.
To justify the amount of money we spend and actually creating crafted things, I mean, I think it is a long-term project. And I think as broadcasters leave this world of quality and going after the other countries outside Iraq, and then we come in to fill it, then we'll get people back. I think everybody now is on a kind of a sort of fest of trying a bit of this, a bit of that, and seeing what happens. And eventually they'll say, actually, my life is short. I need to go somewhere good that will bring me out, show me places, and actually I'll go to The Guardian because they've got that quality there, and they'll push me to other places. So I think we absolutely have to commit to that. And actually that's what we are. It's kind of obvious for me that's where we should go.
Anthony, on this point about do we need to give the whole picture each time in each individual burst of video?
I think there are two. It's the early days of this medium. This is like we're watching, it's like cave paintings on a wall, this stuff, compared to where it's going to end up. But there is this sort of contagion of thinking of video as an asset. You use the word, use the word asset around a piece of video in my presence, I reserve the right to hit you. It is an asset only in the sense that it sits inside a database. But asset thinking, which is what web people do, is you leave this video floating in midair. Now, the other thing that people do on YouTube is they go to the next video that comes up that is offered to them in the video stream, which you don't do. And you will, but you don't yet. There is a fantastic moment there where you are creating editorial choice. And you could be creating editorial choice to stuff that you didn't create. At that moment, because that takes me to my other kind of bugbear. You don't need to make it all. I don't actually agree with Maggie's view that it's going to be all about brands. It's going to be heavily about brands. But you don't need to create it. If you signpost it for me and it's somebody else's, even if it comes up in your video player, I feel happier about you as a brand than I did a minute ago. So maybe part of the balance thing is about reaching out to the web and presenting what's out there rather than necessarily taking a broadcast view of it, which is frankly what that other view is, of making it impartial and or balanced in your own right. It's about the context of the user. What it comes from, this thinking, is thinking as suppliers of content, not thinking as people who... My favourite quote is, nobody gives a damn about your stuff, period. Mine, yours, or anybody else's. Every time I create anything, I assume they're going to click off 7 seconds in. It's a really grounding thought, because most people do. The man at the end there will tell you, 25% of all web video traffic is gone within 10 seconds. 10 seconds. 75% of it has gone within a minute at the moment. May not be like that, but the truth is I'm constantly trying to work out how to keep attention and how to value the fact that they've turned up in the first place. And the fact that I've made it is only a bit relevant to that.
I've got to pick up on this thing. This is fascinating. If people are clicking off that quickly, now I understand your aversion to the title sequence with the telegraph, but does that mean you have to be unbelievably grabby and sensationalistic in how you make things to hook people in those first 10 seconds?
I don't think you have to be grabby and sensationalistic necessarily. You have to be relevant and authentic, and if it is interesting and relevant and authentic, I'll stay with it. So actually I stayed with the 28 days guy. By the way, I've not got ADHD here, but I stayed with him because the story I was being told in the graphics was interesting. The subtitles were wallpaper. if you make a shot of a video online of anybody walking downstairs, take it out. If you make a shot of the front door of somewhere, take it out.
Tolerable on television, but not online.
Required on television, because by and large, most television news is not happening at the same time.
But this is also, you know, this is not entirely a new world.
No, no, no.
If you look at, if you know, TV, all TV news programmes get their stats, and you see, you know, the drop-off... The drop-off for most news programmes goes off a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, Sky News has an individual team that work on the trails for the top of programmes because they know how important that is.
Hold on, we don't, you know, don't chip in here because we're not...
But I'm very quickly, I'm going to try and answer Martin's point.
Yeah.
Can I try and... you know, because video largely is not that findable online, you know, largely, particularly via Google,
yeah,
you know... The videos that get a lot of traction on the site are either embedded in front pages, or it's not a great phrase, or embedded in stories. You know, with this video behind, you know, it's embedded in the story about Barack Obama. You know, and I guess that relates to another question, which is just a small part of the answer to John, but a part of it nonetheless is, you know, part of what the dreaded R2 rebuild redesign of the site has been about is about giving people a greater sense of where they are on the site, what the site is about, and what else there is on the site. You know, so if you look at that page, you can click through, you know, it's clearly there's more on the story on the side, you're clearly in world news, you can find out more about Barack Obama, you can find out more about Hillary Clinton, you can find out more about the US elections, all those things. And I feel that is a part, it's not all, but it's part of creating a context for what people are looking at on screen.
Okay, I'm mindful of time, so what I'm going to do is go to...
John's question. John's question.
The same question of what you're saying here, that are we going in the direction of just doing little grabs of kind of stuff that people click on to get?
The great glory, of, you know, the joy about working at The Guardian, you know, is, you know, we are part of a marketplace, but we're not... We're not only about responding to demands in that marketplace. You know, we are owned by a charity. We have given a clear mission by that charity. And I think, you know, serious journalism and innovative journalism is going to remain a part of what we do in video, and it's going to be built on what we do in video. And I think that's, you know, core to what we do.
Good. Let me just hear as many voices as we can. So start with you, and then we're going to go to you and you. Yeah.
Bobby Johnson, I'm the technology correspondent. I just wondered, coming off the back of that, I mean, we do have a very flat, uninteractive video player. You know, if you go and you look at a different technology like Vimeo or something like that, they allow you to embed links in the timeline. So as it goes along, you can flash up a link to a story. You can say, well, here's another side. Here's, you know, here are those things. And when you get to the end of your YouTube video and a stream of other options come up, you know, we just have this video. And I think it's slightly dangerous to think that it's always going to have context unless we find technical ways to embed the context in the video. But I wondered, kind of spinning off that, what we're doing at looking at other ways to distribute video. You know, we do deals with traditional TV broadcasters. We, you know, hopefully we seed it out into the right search engines and things. But are we supporting, for example, you know, efforts to try and stream our video straight onto people's TVs so they don't have to watch it at their computer screen? Or are we looking at mobile? What are we doing in those areas?
Thank you. I hold your answers there because that's very interesting. While we get the microphone to the woman there in the blue shirt, there we are. So what you were proposing then, your first answer, was a technical fix to what John Dennis was raising, as I understand
it.
Linking embedded with links.
I think that's
an option.
The easiest option, because people are already doing it.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. Okay.
Rebecca from Video. We saw the top of Telegraph TV's politics show, and I was involved a while ago at putting together a pilot for a film show. I just wondered, I'd like to hear your views on the idea of Guardian shows in a more sort of traditional sense, as opposed to just pieces of video.
Thank you. That's really specific and clear. And then this may be related. It is. That's excellent.
Melissa Deans, I'm the arts editor. I think one of the real strengths of what we've been doing online, we've mostly talked about reporting and news, but is some of the arts films that David and Dan have put together. I mean, they've got a real brevity and focus and sort of intimacy that you can't do on TV. And I think one of the real strengths that we have at the moment is that whereas BBC and Channel 4 have struggled with their magazine formats and that stitching together of high and low and finding the right presenters. So I wondered if the panel think that we should pursue the sort of shorter formats, or if we should look at shows, if that's where we're moving to.
Well, that's great. Those last two absolutely relate to each other. Why don't we address that first, and we'll get into Bobby Johnson's thoughts.
I would say I think you can answer it both questions the same way, because I couldn't agree more with Bobby about needing to embed within the dreaded asset, within the video, because the video is going to go and do its own thing on the web somewhere, so you might as well know it was Guardian. You might as well get a link to it. Maddie Lanton did the first piece of consultancy on video on GU, and we're still working with you. I think shows works, but I think you've got to conceive them as things that are going to be broken into small pieces, and you've got to conceive them as interactive. So they're kind of, yeah, they're more like magazine shows that could be broken into small pieces. They've got to feel interactive, and that's why I think it's the same answer as the answer to Bobby's question. If I was doing shows, and there is a proposal in that I might be doing a show with you, if I was doing shows, I'd be doing something which was very much about using the technology to embed in the structure of the show. But then expecting people to only watch 4 minutes if necessary, so also breaking my show up. It is more like making nationwide.
Would you actually display it on the page online, that here's the whole thing, and then there's the interview with Michael Billington there, there's the clip from the new ballet there.
Yeah.
So you can do either option.
You do both, okay. And absolutely you do both. And this is one of the things about online. The problem with having broadcast mentality here is you've only got one platform and one way of delivering. With online, you can do both.
Yeah.
So do both.
Yeah.
You don't need a single answer. You can have both answers for almost no additional cost. So do both.
What do you, Maggie, your view on this, shows or items?
Show, I mean, I agree with shows. The main thing we have to avoid is it is about actually trying to bring the proper production standard. So actually, you look at that Telegraph and you look at the way it's shot in terms of the table and immediately go, that looks naff, it's a turn-off. So we actually have to do it well. But I think you do break it up and you do probably do it shorter.
Rebecca, was behind your question an experience with the film programme? Was there an experience that somehow didn't work as a whole show? Here's the microphone.
I think that didn't work. I mean, it was just me putting it together, basically. So it's a resourcing issue. But I felt very much that if we wanted to do it, you know, we'd want to do it well. And me with a, you know, camera and setting up some lights in a... yeah, exactly. I was worried that it really properly resourced. And I know that in King's Place, for example, I've been told there's a studio. So I was just wondering, what stage things are at, what the plans are, and whether it's something we want to be developing more of, you know, in lots of different strands or not, and whether we want to do them, you know, in terms of the style we present them, because that looks, the TV Telegraph thing looks very much like sort of slightly cheaply done TV shows.
Because that's the issue, isn't it, Tom, that you could do, when you do individual items in a way they can stand on their own merits, once you wrap them in a programme, they can look like a sort of knock-off poor man's film 2008 kind of thing.
Well, you know, I talked about right on earlier. I think one thing the Telegraph has done very well on that is the fact they have, you know, you can see on the site broken up the show and you can click on the bits you want. You know, I think it's more a question of strands rather than shows. You know, I think once we've built up our capacity and all these things, you know, it's funny looking out on this audience, seeing so many people who've actually been involved in it. And I'm conscious of all the frustrations people have felt. You know, Bobby's question produced a sort of grimace on Robert, our head of video's face, because, you know, we're desperate to get a better player, but, you know, it's got to go in the priorities list that come out, the tech team in the R2 bunker, you know, with a million and one requests to, you know, we still haven't brought out, you know, all of the site in R2, so those are the things we're going to get to. But I think, you know, I think strands, not shows, really. I think you need to give people an opportunity to choose what they want to watch in that. So if we did do it in film, which I think we should be doing and will be doing, you know, you give people a choice if they want to watch, you know, a short piece of arty filmmaking about the British documentary movement in the 1930s, or whether they just want to see a review of, you know, the blockbuster opening on Friday. Both, I think, can represent, you know, Guardian journalism, but you are presenting people with a choice, which is, you know, in a low-tech way, exactly the sort of choice they have when they flick through a newspaper. They just don't get it when they turn on their television.
You've got
and
to
watch
know
the
about
culture
talent,
show.
You've got to know about talent too, haven't you? You've got to know how to engage columnist or presenting talent in that kind of project. Because without that, you have no real authenticity.
You know, our experience doing that, without mentioning any names, is, you know, a lot of our reporters are fantastically good on screen, but they're not fantastically good on screen when you turn to them and say, could you be a presenter now and read this off a teleprompter, you know, or auto cue. That's when they seize up and they're terrible, you know. And I think if you look at the things that have really worked, it's where reporters are sort of being themselves and they're not asked to be a sort of, you know, head in the stick. You know, if you watch the sort of thing that Bobby and John did out of the Las Vegas, what was the big tech show? I can't remember what it's called. Yeah, you know, I thought Bobby was fantastic in those, but he was not. Better watch what I say. He was not a conventional TV presenter in that kind of way.
You were being Bobby, you know, and that's the thing you need to be. You need to be authentic.
You know, the same with the stuff that you did in Vienna with, you know, James Richardson is an experienced TV presenter, but Barry most certainly isn't, but he has got a charm all of his own, you know. And I think there's the sort of thing he's got to do. So it's horses for courses, and I think, you know, we desperately need to improve the way we present video on the site and also present it within stories as well. I think, you know, it just sits in.
I'm just keen to get no, so yes, Saranga, on the Bobby point about the technology. One thing nobody's talked about is this other ways to distribute video. It seems there's a consensus on the embedding links. People like that idea, but the business about is the Guardian think of other ways to distribute video. Is there anything helpful you can tell us about how we might do that?
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends what you're trying to achieve. But, I mean, broadly speaking, there are a million different ways you can do that. And if you do that more, then all you do is allow your, you know, brand and your content to be discoverable in lots of different places. That the 242 Days pieces of content that we saw are really good examples of this. The Telegraph one, if I was a Telegraph reader, maybe I'd sit there and watch it because it sort of, you know, it would tell me what I wanted to know. The difference to the Guardian one is it's actually very embeddable. I mean, that's a video that I can absolutely see people putting in their own blogs and sending around to friends in a way that they never would do with the Telegraph one. The Telegraph one is just news. I mean, I could have picked that up on anything, but there's something very distinctive about what the second one does. If you then make that technically linkable, and linkable not just in the sense that you can pick up that video and put it on your own site, but also, for example, add extra links to it and make that linkable to something else that somebody else has done that's relevant or whatever else, then you get people involved in the creation process. The important thing about letting people sort of take part in creating the content, although it's a little bit scary in some ways, the really good thing about it doing that is that they get some ownership over the content that you're producing. The second people have ownership, then they really, really care about pushing it. Because if it's yours, you want everybody to see it, right? So you basically end up, you know, recruiting this army of marketers, as it were, pushing your content in lots and lots of different ways because you've let them be part of it slightly.
Thank you. Let's have a closing thought from each one of you. One thing that we should be, an innovation that would be very positive in this whole range of subjects we've covered, that the Guardian.co.uk should be doing with its video in the next period. Start with you, Saranga. It could be just the thing you've mentioned, so it'll be easy, but, you know.
I'll actually just sort of go completely the other way from what I started off with and just sort of say, don't over-engineer it. I think it's very, very tempting in this world to sort of look towards television and do the sorts of things that Telegraph is trying to do, but you end up sort of falling short because, as people have said over and over again, you're not Reuters and you're not the BBC and so on. Instead, stick to what you actually do best. And as long as you make that message, you know, consistent with what you've always been about, then both the people who know you and the people who discover you randomly from the US because they did the right search will understand what it's about, and that will propagate the message.
Excellent. Maggie?
Well, I think it's just what I've said. I think that the door is already open and we've got that reputation, and we have to, the next step is just to sort of pull it all together. And it isn't about creating our own content, because you're absolutely right, Tom. It costs a bloody fortune, you know, but we have to make some of it, and we have to reach out around the world to the fantastic content that's out there. And it might be a Taliban leader talking about why the Americans will never win. And we can put all those voices there, but somebody has to sift through all that. And the word has to go out that actually it's all done for you. It's at The Guardian. There's quality stuff that the broadcasters aren't doing, and they've also put together a package and you can find it easy. So there's it's a one-stop shop, and it's
Brilliant.
Us.
Brilliant.
Anthony? Don't confuse your website with your impact on the web. People think that everybody has a tendency to think that what you put up is your website and that's what you're doing online. And Sarang just said, if you're really harnessing potential of all the things that Maggie's saying about quality and authenticity and your point of view, why would you want to limit that, the impact of that, to www.guardian.co.uk? So be part of the web and not just the website. And you really will make that work if you go that far. And that doesn't mean you can't commercialise it. The great myth of that is you then can't commercialise that. You know, the prosecution refers you to my earlier comments about Google. It can be done. But it requires a bigger piece of thinking that isn't just about your technology, your player, and www.guardian.co.uk.
Close, last word to you, Tom.
I think in terms of video, we have to keep on trying new things, keep on trying to improve what we're doing, you know, and I think we need to do more. I think we need to be more places on the web. We need to do more aggregation. We need to have a greater variety of templates that we can present video in. And I think we have to do more subjects, more styles, and things like that. And I think, you know, the final thought is, you know, part of the reason we've slightly been frustrated with technical development is because actually the big push now in terms of video, audio and multimedia in general is the opportunity afforded us with our move to King's Place, where a huge part of the building is put over to new media production, lovely shiny edit suites, studio, lots of exciting things like that. So I think, you know, in many ways we're at a moment now, I think, where we've done some good things, we've done some less good things, and we found many things frustrating, though I think we've had a period of success, but I think we're moving into an era we're going to do more and be a lot better.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you. A very interesting experience, brilliant discussion, I think. Great experience for me to know less, not only than everyone on the panel, which is familiar, but everyone in the audience as well, about this subject. But I'm sure you all want to join me in thanking Tom Happold, Anthony Lilly, Maggie O'Kane and Shangra Chandratilake for a really very good discussion. Thanks very much, all of you.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.